A landmark health care bill passes the Senate.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. As Wall Street begins its day, we're looking at news affecting the economy and you. This morning, the health care bill passed the Senate. Also, new jobless claims came in at an almost 15-month low. Those stories and more just ahead. But first, where's Wall Street? Traders seem to like those jobless numbers. The S&P 500 is up 0.25% now, and the NASDAQ up 0.33%. The Dow is ahead by 17 points. It's at 10,483. European stocks have risen slightly this morning as well, and Asian markets were up today, too. Earlier this hour, President Obama hailed the Senate's passage of its health care bill. The president said this morning's vote brings the country toward the end of a nearly century-long struggle.
If this legislation becomes law, workers won't have to worry about losing coverage if they lose or change jobs. Families will save on their premiums. Businesses that would see their costs rise if we do not act will save money now, and they will save money in the future.
For some analysis, let's bring in economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial. She joins us live from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
There's been a lot of debate over whether Congress is going to increase competition here in the health insurance marketplace. Will this measure help the insurance consumer?
It will help marginally, and that is important. On the one side, though, it will be taking from, interestingly, labor, and Republicans are aligned on not having the higher tax on Cadillac plans because many unions have the best and most expensive plans out there. So it is a it's going to create a lot of odd bedfellows as we move into the new year and have the fighting that goes on out there. It can increase competition on the margin, but this is a more evolutionary than revolutionary bill.
Well, the bedfellows are going to include lobbyists here as the House and Senate work things out after the Christmas break. How much are lobbyists going to shape the final legislation?
Well, they've already had a huge impact. Their fingerprints are all over it. And I think, you know, one of the things I can certainly say from going to Washington often, Washington is the only city I know where hotel prices have gone up because the number of lobbyists in town have gone up. And they're buying very expensive rooms as well, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So there's no question the lobbyists are, they've got vested interests, they've got money, and they're out there for both the doctors and the insurance companies. Unfortunately, many of those who are uninsured don't have many lobbyists.
I want to get to some economic data that came in this morning. As I mentioned, the number of new unemployment claims fell last week to the lowest level in more than 15 months. These are just weekly numbers. How significant is that?
It's very important in that we're close to a tipping point in the labor market. We're getting close to the point where we're sort of at zero base and generating as many jobs as we're losing. We need to start creating a lot more jobs. We're going to see more jobs created, I do believe, in the next year. We've got 1 million coming from census alone. So that'll help to give us a leg up on 2010. But we lost 750,000 jobs last January. Even if we manage to eke out a few job creations in the month of January of 2010, it'll be nothing to pop champagne corks over. Maybe you can crack a beer for the new year.
Beer, not champagne. Economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, happy holidays and thank you so much.
Happy holidays.
Today, the government will reveal how much the top executives at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac made this year. Remember, these are the giant mortgage finance companies that were bailed out by the government. Taken over, really, seized following the collapse of the housing market. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has our story.
Fannie CEO Michael Williams and Freddie CEO Ed Haldeman are each expected to make between $4 and $6 million this year. Fannie and Freddie were seized by federal regulators in September 2008 and have needed more than $100 billion in taxpayer money. The salaries of the two CEOs are paid in cash, even though the Obama administration wants CEO pay at bailed-out banks and other financial institutions to be primarily made up of long-term compensation like stock. The problem is their stock is largely worthless. Tim Riddio of the University of Wisconsin Business School explains that's the legacy of the real estate crash that precipitated the financial crisis.
So when the housing bubble popped, investors in Fannie and Freddie took a harder look at the assets that they held. So when the value of your assets drop, effectively it doesn't take a lot to bankrupt you.
Because Fannie and Freddie were taken over by the government, their CEO's pay isn't subject to government pay czar Kenneth Feinberg, who has just approved pay packages for executives at GM. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The Census Bureau is estimating its 2010 count. That count will affect how more than $400 billion a year in federal money gets distributed. Interesting note, California probably won't get any new House seats for the first time since 1920. People are leaving the Golden State as fast as they're coming in. This is the Morning Report for December 24th at Marketplace.org. Another round of retention payments is slated to be paid to AIG executives in March. It is a pot even bigger than the bonuses that got paid this year and stirred up all that public anger. But AIG executives still haven't paid back all they promised to return from their 2009 bonuses. Jill Barchet has that.
Some AIG executives resigned and took the bonus money with them. But some still work at the insurance giant. Kenneth Feinberg is the U.S. Special Master for Executive Compensation. He sets the pay for the top 25 executives at AIG, now that it's majority owned by the government.
One way or another, I am confident that the pledged amounts will be repaid to the Treasury.
Feinberg's bigger headache may be how to slash AIG's next round of retention payments, $198 million.
The law permits me to try and renegotiate those contracts, and if I can't do that, the law states that I can take those retention payments into account in establishing and determining 2010 compensation. So I am not without some leverage, limited as it may be.
In New York, I'm Jill Barchet from Marketplace.
Now that the Senate has passed its health care overhaul bill, senators will have to work out the differences between their version and that of the House. They have differences, but the bills have one thing in common. Their costs will kick in before their benefits. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
At this point, subsidies and consumer protections won't kick in for several years, but consumers want help right away. Kaiser Family Foundation President Drew Altman says there's an expectations gap.
People's premiums are still going to go up, and their out-of-pocket costs are going to go up, and they're going to say, well, we heard this big health reform debate, and where's all this help that we were hearing about? And they could get frustrated.
Especially since the taxes and fees in both bills hit right away. The House would tax the wealthy. The Senate taxes so-called Cadillac insurance plans. Leighton Koo teaches health policy at George Washington University. He says the fees come first because Congress wants to pay for the benefits before they kick in.
They certainly are concerned about trying to make sure that this will not cost the federal government any additional money in the first 10 or 20 years.
Koo says that's impossible if the fees and benefits take effect at the same time. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
I mentioned the Senate passing its health insurance bill this morning. Well, health insurance is the subject of this morning's Marketplace Globalist Quiz with our quizmaster, Stefan Richter of theglobalist.com. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Bill. Are you ready for today's Globalist Quiz?
Ready as ever.
So here's my question for you. In 10 years' time, what will a family like your own or mine pay in the United States in health insurance in a given year? Will it be $13,000 a year, $19,000 a year, $24,000, or even $31,000?
Annual insurance premiums?
Mm-hmm.
When I don't know, I go with C, $24,000.
That's always a safe option, but you're off. It's even higher than that, according to the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation, the average employer-provided family health insurance policy is currently on track to cost about $31,000 in 2019.
$31,000 in premiums. And help me out here. What's the average family income in the United States?
The average family income is around $50,000. So that means that a significant chunk of anything that you and I and our spouses and everybody else will labor for will be eaten up by health care costs.
Like they say in Christmas Carol, are these things that will be or only might be?
might be, and hopefully we can stem the tide. If you assume that healthcare costs will increase a little less, then you will be right. It would be $24,000 a year, but you know, we all stand with bated breath and see what they get accomplished in Washington. Currently, it doesn't look like we get those costs under sufficient control for families not to have to work for healthcare most of their time.
Some sobering numbers. Thanks for joining us, Stefan.
Good to have been with you. Bye.
Stefan Richter is publisher and editor-in-chief of TheGlobalist.com, the daily online magazine on the economy, politics, and culture. Here it is, Christmas Eve, and if you're like me, you probably have not waited until today to start your holiday indulging. What to do with all that extra weight we're packing on? Well, you could go to the gym, or you could bring the gym to you, even to your office. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk, Caitlin Carroll explains.
Billy Dutton is the CEO of Music.com. He's also a master multitasker. I'm standing in his office while he's on the phone with a client.
When do you leave for New York?
He's also sending emails, and that sound you hear, that's him walking on a treadmill.
There's no doubt that it gets the attention of everyone that pokes their head in the office.
It is Dutton's Trek Desk. It's shaped like a semicircle. It has a cup holder, an outbox, places for pens and pencils, pretty much everything but the treadmill. You supply that. Dutton says his Trek Desk makes him more productive.
It does, and there's something about that that makes you more alert. If you're not sitting in your chair, it's easy to get really comfortable in a chair.
Do you ever have lunch up here?
Absolutely, yeah.
Dutton keeps the treadmill speed low enough so he doesn't break into a sweat or slip off. Steve Bordley created the Trek Desk.
I mean, the number one reason most Americans don't work out is they don't have time. Number two is they lack the motivation. And this takes all that away.
The desk costs about $500. Bordley says he sold hundreds since this summer. And his isn't the only treadmill desk on the market. Bordley and other manufacturers are hoping to attract employers looking to keep their workers fit. They're also going after people who are chained to their desks at home. Ron Getzel is the director of the Institute for Health and Productivity Studies at Emory University. He says walking while you work is worth a try.
If it's an alternative to sitting at your desk, it sounds like an intriguing idea. I'd be interested in trying it out.
Dutton invites me to try out the Trek Desk. The walking is fairly easy. It's getting off that's the problem. Okay, I almost ate it. Like the treadmill, coordination comes separately. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
You have one more day to decide whether you're buying any more Christmas gifts. And although we usually talk about retailers hoping that you spend, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports local governments are counting on you, too.
The city of Mesa, Arizona, depends on its local sales tax for almost a third of its general fund. That pays for the police and fire departments, libraries and parks. Deputy City Manager Brian Raines estimates sales tax revenue has fallen about 9% this year. He won't know for a while how holiday sales held up, but he's not very optimistic.
We've learned here over the past 2 years as revenues across the board have declined to not expect a great deal.
Mesa has been hit hard by the housing bust. It's had to cut 10% of its public workforce. One thing the city can be thankful for, it didn't get hit by a blizzard last weekend. Kim Rubin is an economist at the Tax Policy Center in Washington, D.C. She says when people in her area couldn't get to the stores, they turned to online shopping.
Which, in theory, people should be paying sales taxes on those sales, but in practice, people don't normally pay sales taxes.
The National Retail Federation predicts holiday sales will be down about 1% over last year. Rubin says nationally about 10% of city revenue comes from sales taxes. And with revenue from property and income taxes down too, every bit counts. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally, an Ohio woman caught her 6-year-old daughter shoplifting a $3 pack of tattoo stickers and turned her in and found out the store was offering a $30 reward for catching shoplifters. The mom says she thought about it, but decided people might think she set the whole thing up, so she didn't ask. This is Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.